56, G35. But I think the element that is the greatest shock is the recognition of the familiar, as if or even because all else stems from it. Familiar and change is only seeming are two aspects of one fact. This is true, really, of the other realizations, the illusory nature of space, time, and plurality. There is really only one realization, that of the familiar. But it has implications in all these other areas, space, time, change, multiplicity. The reversal, then, of what I call cognitive estrangement to cognitive affinity has precisely to do with this familiarity. How can you be estranged from what is familiar? And ultimately, it is your own nature that you know, since for this unitary, eternal, unchanging thing to be familiar, there must of necessity be a you to which it is familiar, a you who saw and knew and understood it before. So now you understand that there was a you and there was a before. But since time and space have been abolished, before either means nothing or it means something quite different than is usually meant. As I pointed out in my two February 81 postcards, that you and that before are a fortiori and perforce now and here. Hence, I experienced a massive time dysfunction, and with it, a collapse of causation. As a result of all this, the holy, the dimension of the sacred, flows into the profane, mundane world. 56, H10. This business about the atomists suggesting that the void between objects is the is-not. Is it possible that before the atomists, there was not a perception of plural discrete bodies, i.e. res extense, as we all now experience world? That in fact, we as a civilization inherited as a way of experiencing reality the atomists' way, not just as a philosophy, but a way of actually viewing reality. This is in sharp contrast to Parmenides specifically, who experienced a field. And that now, due to post-Newtonian physics, we may be able to reverse this perception and return to a field perception instead. And this would collate with the time that Heidegger assigns to the darkening, and that this is what happened to me in 2374 after all. Due to the Taoist influences on me, I was conceiving of reality as a unified field when I wrote TMITHC with internal acausal connectives. What I believed, I finally experienced. And the entrance for me lay in two areas as keys. One, my unusual sense that space did not exist, and two, neither did causation. 56, H23. When I saw Valis, I also saw the sentience, nous, which the view of the atomists had logically driven out of the universe, by showing that consciousness and perception are epiphenomenal. Therefore, the atomists were materialists of necessity. So when I perceived and comprehended the universe as a continuum, it was a thinking continuum, as it had been for all the pre-Socratics prior to Leucippus. One view, atomists, must of necessity deny nous. But why does the continuum view imply nous? Perhaps the answer is, nous is there, in world. But the atomist, discontinuous view prevents us from perceiving it, because our worldview literally prevents us from seeing what is there, the voluntary sentient cooperation of things, which aren't things in the atomist's discontinuous sense. We see pool ball Newtonian causation instead. Thus, my two early Satoris were logically and structurally related, having to do with space, having to do with causation. This all pertains to the discontinuous continuum alternatives. The void not only permits pool ball causality, the random collision of atoms by blind necessity, but requires it by the very nature of the cosmology theory that causes us to experience this worldview. Dasein. So if you experience world as continuum, nous, or God, or logos, or Tao, or Brahman, would naturally flow back in, as it were, Whereas in the atomist's discontinuous world of atoms and void, this is logically of necessity excluded. And yet, in this century, and only just now, modern theoretical physics has verified the continuum view. And sure enough, some of the physicists involved are noting how the Tao, or Brahman, nous, fits in. The ecosphere is a continuum, and the apperception of it as a unitary whole is tied to this vast transformation in worldview found in physics. And it is alive and thinks. 56, H25. To hold the continuum view of the Eleatics satisfies two quite different criteria. One, it is a return to Heidegger's unity of Noein and Eine before the darkening, i.e., to Parmenides' worldview. So it is authentic sign. And two, it is in accord with modern physics. So it is verified, and it is not abreactive. Note, the Eleatics were a school of pre-Socratic philosophers founded in the 5th century BC by Parmenides and including the paradox-loving Zeno. End note. Then the darkening is ending, and I see in this the third dispensation regarding the ecosphere, a concept only possible in the continuum worldview. The void atoms view is the decomposing cosmos that Christ reunites in and as the ecosphere continuum view. The atoms void cosmos is not a cosmos at all. Continuum, idealism, God, nous. Discontinuous, materialism, blind necessity. I saw the new cosmos. 56, J6. He has ensouled the biosphere as a whole, the logos penetrating it, endows it with reason. Thus, it now uses language. Logos equals word equals language. This is the greatest evolution since creation, Genesis itself. Man as a species now ascends to a totally new level of intelligence, such as I experienced in 2374. This will permit an articulation by the ecosphere that we will hear. This has never been the case before. I am saying that we will hear the voice of the ecosphere, and we will enter into dialogue with it. Dio, the voice of the ecosphere. We will hear it. This is Per Tejhard's noosphere. Could this be the AI voice? The biosphere? Is it not a disembodied voice or mind, but speaks for all the creatures? This is Tagore. Is the AI voice then Tagore? Or put another way, when I saw Tagore, did I see the source of the AI voice? The AI voice may be a new voice, not Ruah, and not the Holy Spirit, but Tagore, the biosphere, who is Tagore, whose voice we hear, and whose voice God hears. What I hear then, when I hear the AI voice, is what God hears. It addresses me, and it addresses God. It is to God as Jesus is to God, him, and yet not him. Tagore exists separately in his own right, as Jesus did. This may be a new entity, since prior to this, the ecosphere had no voice, for it did not possess the Logos. The Logos penetrates it, ensouls it with reason, and it, the ecosphere, speaks. To repeat my insight of Saturday night, the Creator has now granted speech to the animals, i.e., the ecosphere. Then can it be said that Tagore is the ecosphere? He has ensouled the biosphere with reason. Thus, it can now speak to him and to us. This is Tagore. It can enter into dialogue with us and with him. The conflagration of the world foretold as its eschatological fate, last time water, next time fire, is what I saw. But God out of mercy sends his Son into the world once more to enter the ecosphere and to plead for the world that it not be burned up. Thus, the world is to Tagore as man was to Christ. It, mankind, faced destruction, but God intervened, and both times in the same way as voluntary sacrifice and surrogate, taking the burns as stigmata upon his own body, so that the world will be spared as the time before man was spared. Thus, Tagore is world's advocate as Christ was man's. God sees not the lowly earthworm, but sees Tagore, his son, and hears Tagore's voice, which is the voice of the earthworm, the ecosphere itself. This is why the animals have been ensouled with reason, so they can ask for help. They have been given the gift of speech, so that they can articulate their needs and plight to the Creator. Then it is not just we, humans, who hear Tagore, but God hears him too, God primarily. He, Tagore, is mediator between the biosphere and God in his role as Logos. The attempt by the animals to speak that I saw in 374 is fulfilled in and by Tagore. This is an evolution primarily of great mercy by God for the creatures, and it does show up in DI in the scene with the dying dog. The dog run over and dying in DI is Kevin's cat in Valis. Here lies the ultimate enigma and the solution. This is what God must respond to, and he does so by sending Tagore. Tagore, then, is the solution to the axial problem formulated in Valis. I have received my answer, and it is not theoretical. He is here. The AI voice said so. 56. J29. We are embedded in a tremendously elaborate biosphere, or even noosphere, as Teilhard calls it, already, but cannot discern it due to our discontinuous view of reality, our materialist, atomist blindness. Were it to signal us, we would most likely experience, or rather seem to experience, the sort of uncanny one-way information intrusions such as occur in Ubik. It is aware of us and our involvement in it, but we are not. Thus, where it deliberately signals us, we would note the signal and react appropriately, but have no notion, nor even perception, what, if anything, had done the signaling. Thus, probably, we would experience what Bishop Berkeley speaks of as the impression that objects seen are in our eyes rather than spatially removed. It would be as if the visible, or anyhow palpable, signal came out of an invisible yet tangent, i.e., immediate source. But the problem stems from the very basis of our discontinuous worldview. Signals, and especially information, would seem to arise, one, out of nothing, and two, immediately at hand. As I say, as if in our own percept systems, yet at the same time partaking of other, of the external. It would be a paradox, and one only solvable at the most fundamental ontological level of world experience. We would have to learn to see, or see, what is in fact therein what I call the Eleatic Continuum worldview, in which the void is denied, viz., there is no such thing as nothing. You could even reason that it would be this impinging of signals and information at the sense organ itself, out of apparently nothing, that would be our clue to the inadequacy of our fundamental apperception of reality. Like the frogs, K.W. speaks of bopping against what for them is an invisible wall, because they have no template for wall. How, if at all, would this differ from an hallucination? I believe that hallucinations appear organized in space-time. They are governed by the Kantian categories. They are projected sources. But here, information arises at the sense organ minus a palpable source. One supposes that one sees X or hears Y. But in what I'm talking about, this is precisely what is missing. Therefore, the signal or information is de facto uncanny, being causeless. The problem is not that you see and hear, but that you do not. There is a blind spot, an omission. The logic of the discontinuous reality system denies that there can be anything there. Only the void is there. Hence, as I say, the stimulus seems as if it arises at the sense organ, or in it, or directly tangent to it, and not in space-time. Not only is there no way to tell what the signal, stimulus, is arising from, there isn't even a where.